The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
New highs, and new highs. 3 weeks of gains as the Trump rally continues, but some overheating warning signs starting to crop up. OPEC meeting may be canceled, maybe not. Who knows? Oil drops on the news. We'll see what happens this week. We have all this and much more on episode number 486 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hey there. It's Andrew Horowitz, and you know, I got my voice back. Pretty much, well, most of my voice. It's a little bit, still a little scruffy. Had this terrible, just awful sore throat and cold and just wouldn't go away for a number of days. And it ended up in just totally taking my voice away and right in time for the holidays. Hopefully you had a great holiday. It was Thanksgiving, of course, and lots of time to spend with family and friends and enjoy some great food, conversation. Hopefully not too much in the world of politics. I got so many of my friends that are so frustrated. They said they had their folks over and various friends at the table of during Thanksgiving, and everybody was talking about politics and getting all pissed off and angry and upset, and it's not worth it. Don't get so crazy about it. It's just, you know, let's kind of see what happens moving forward. But we have obviously a big change in the global environment when it comes to politics right now. First, we saw the Brexit and a big upset there. Then we saw Donald Trump win here, and that was a big upset in terms of what was the status quo, what was going to happen, what was going to be possibly the next level of continuation or maybe change. And here we are now with this new potential change that we're seeing with some tax code, and we're seeing a reduction in taxes possible coming to a IRS near you. And we see that we're having possibly a repatriation of billions of assets. We also saw that there's news about reduced regulation, tariffs being changed to benefit domestic companies here, trade deals being ripped up. There's a lot going on. Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act possibly being ripped up. The markets seem to like it. The markets seem to think that, well, this is all really good. This is all really good for investing and for stocks because there's a change. There's not the same thing. And the taxes alone will be very beneficial to the economy. With the fact that the economy right now has been slugging along, you know, 1.5, maybe 2%, inflation not really picking up. But the idea that maybe there'll be some taxes that will be reduced, putting money in the pockets of everybody, giving the opportunity to have more spending, is pretty exciting. Now, along with this, we've been seeing the dollar. Let's talk about this for just a minute here. The dollar. The dollar's at, what, 1.5? And while that seems that's such a good thing because, well, the U.S. economy will be stronger and people are putting money in from foreign countries into the U.S. saying that this will be a much better place to invest, the question still remains as to, is it really going to be beneficial in the long run with regard to taxes and with regard to the economy to then say that stocks will do really well, particularly those that are heavy exporters? Think about how much the dollar has moved over the last several weeks. Went from about 94 to about 101.50. That can't be good for many companies that rely on sales outside of the U.S. This is why we're seeing such a dramatic move in the small caps, because they don't have as much exposure overseas. They will gain much more from a policy that will benefit and slant towards domestic consumption. Does that make sense? So the small cap index has been just rallying. I don't think it's actually had a down day since Trump was elected. And that makes sense to a degree. To a degree, once valuations become a little bit out of hand. And we're getting there, it looks like, pretty quickly. It looks like the advancement of the idea that this is all going to be so beneficial without really having anything in writing, any real programs that are being presented at this point, because obviously he's not in office yet. Nothing's been really worked out. That's going to be the time when we're going to have to see if this really is something that is beneficial. But at 101.50, the dollar, you have to wonder about some of the larger cap companies like the Staples companies, those companies that have the most exposure internationally. Because if you look at the international markets, we're already seeing that they're not doing so well with the rising dollar. And if you look at it, even in a non-dollar denominated currency basis, outside the U.S., markets are not doing so great. And now we have, of course, further issues that are being put into the system that may be a recount at this point. So there's going to be a lot of things that go into whether or not this is really a true rally that can be sustained based on the hearsay. It's nothing more than hearsay right now with regard to some of the, as they're calling it now, the Trumponomics. We'll have to see. Let's talk about a little bit. I have a few things I really want to get to, by the way. I want to talk about this whole fake news issue because it really relates to financial markets. I also want to talk to you about a pretty cool screen. I mentioned this on Frank Curzio's show. I was on his show last week. So if you have a chance or if you haven't had a chance yet, go over to frankcurzio.com and listen to the last podcast he put out because we talked a lot about the whole idea of what's going on with some of these stocks that are going up 25, 30% a day. And I have a list for you and I'll tell you how to get that. But looking backwards for a moment, and we'll talk about some of the things that are coming up in the next week. We did see a shortened week for trading, of course, with the Thanksgiving holiday. All four key U.S. equity indices reached new highs. The Russell 2000 hit a record of 1,347 after its 15th straight day of gains. So about 2.5% for the week, a little less than 2.5% for the week. The Dow moved up about 1.5% for the week, closed at 19,152. And the NASDAQ was up 1.42%. The S&P, which is up just about 3% since the election, rose about 1.5% to 2,213 for the week. Now, we had some homes data that was out for the week. The National Association of Realtors came out and announced a 2% gain for resales in October. But existing home sales are moving significantly. And even with inventory down about 4.5%, the median home price of sales of existing homes, the price to buy an existing home that's on the market, was up 6% in the past year. New home sales actually declined about 2% in October, but were still up about 12.7% year over year, close to that. Now, consumer sentiment improved, went to 93.8 with the University of Michigan's overall sentiment index, which was the second reading, which surpassed the first reading. This usually is a case. We see a first reading that's, you know, a number, and somehow the second and third seem to get a little bit higher as time goes on. The other thing that was really interesting last week was durable goods. We saw that the October gain in capital goods orders was the largest measured by the Department of Commerce for this year, for a whole year, actually, 12 months. We saw a 94% increase in commercial aircraft orders, which was a big factor. But we did see inventories on the business side rise about 0.5% in October. So the durable goods orders, which were really good on the headline numbers, you have to kind of take out the effect of some of the commercial aircraft orders, which have been doing very well recently, as many of the airlines are refitting and getting rid of some of their old planes, buying some of the newer ones, more efficient ones, more fuel efficient, more efficient in terms of, you know, seating, etc. Now, what's coming in this week? We got some interesting earnings out this week because it's really going to be focused on retail. And already we're seeing some numbers come in over the Black Friday holiday weekend. A couple different reports that we saw some records on you know, in the e-commerce area on e-commerce sales. We saw that there was a little bit less spent on average by the consumer compared to last year overall when it came to some of the brick and mortar. So there's still that considerable move towards internet-based buying and shopping, which we, I don't think you're surprised about that. It's a much easier way to shop. Very, you know, you just get it done. There's a lot of sales going on. There was also a lot of discounting that went on when it comes to the malls and the brick and mortars. So the sales that they saw that was at a record, the average was down. It doesn't actually compute very well. I guess what I could say is that we're no worse or no better than we were last year. So that's generally speaking a good thing. So sales are not really dropping off. There's, you know, people are still rather enthusiastic. We can see that with the consumer sentiment. And overall, you know, with the idea that there's a change happening, markets are doing better, people are feeling a little bit better in terms of their bank account balances and pension funds and brokerage accounts, et cetera, a lot more people working. So we should be able to see that there has been a much better overall sales over the weekend and through the holiday season. I would say, unless something gets really crazy here, you'd have to say that things probably should be better. We have all things that are going into the calculation, the movement of consumers that should benefit the holiday season. So we'll have to see as time goes on. We got Cyber Monday coming up, of course, and all these other things that will come up and the various promotions throughout the end of the holiday. Things should be better. The question is going to be whether or not retailers feel compelled to discount and how that's going to translate then into their net earnings. And as I mentioned, we have a good amount of retail starting to provide some of their earnings results. Yeah, we have Shoe Carnival, Thor Industries. That's Thor Industries, the RV manufacturer. On Tuesday, we're going to have the Q3 estimate, the second estimate of Q3 growth. We have the conference board coming out with consumer confidence. And of course, September, S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index are coming out. Tiffany's is going to have a report also. We're going to be watching that one to see what's happening in the higher-end jewelry area. You know, I don't know if you've been watching this, but on Fifth Avenue, where many of the companies, the high-end fashion and jewelry and retail companies do business in New York, they're having a lot of problems because Trump Tower, where Donald Trump lives, part of it is shut down. Consumers are being required to walk in different areas. Some of the stores are seeing a major slope down of consumer traffic. And it's because people just don't want to go there. The traffic on Fifth Avenue in that area is horrible. The amount of security is incredible. I think it's close to $1 million to $1.25 million a day of New York Police Department security plus Secret Service. And again, traffic is being pushed around all over the place because of the fact that Donald Trump is there and they require all the security now. So it's really causing a problem for the foot traffic of some of these major stores right there on Fifth Avenue. Anyway, on Wednesday, we're going to see ADP's numbers of unemployment because, of course, Friday, we know that it's the first Friday of the month for December. And on Friday, we're going to be seeing the employment report from the Department of Labor. We also have things like, let's see, we have, of course, Lazy Boy, Guess, American Eagle Outfitters. Some of these, we'll call them teen brands, have not been doing well. Aeropostale, of course, we know about. The Gap, we know about. But we're going to have to see what happens with this. Then we're going to have Dollar General, Express, Five Below, Kroger, Land's End, Sears, and Smith & Wesson. We'll see what's happening actually with the gun companies, if in fact there has been a slowdown, even in the last few weeks, of sales and what their outlook is, considering the fact that now we may have a much more friendly regulatory environment for guns and gun control, therefore making it so that consumers don't have to actually go out and rush out and worry about, man, I need a gun now because they're going to change the laws. With the Republicans in control at this point, and they're much more favorable and much more lenient on gun control, There's a lot of talk about how it won't be as necessary for people to feel that they need to go out and just go out there and buy as much as they can right now. Now, earlier I was telling you about that. There was something I want to talk about. Now, I'm going to give you the opportunity. You go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com under this particular episode. Go over to the show notes. And there's a form there. If you want to download the reverse split, we're calling it the reverse split low float screen, which we're going to talk about right after I do this little rant and this discussion on fake news. You know, I'll tell you what that's all about in a second, but I've been struck by the amount of coverage that we're starting to get on this whole idea of quote unquote fake news. And that could be all sorts of things. And I was wondering, well, is the idea of why they're bringing up and trying to really push this whole story through about fake news all about trying to get more hits and more views to understand what's fake news and what's not and to promote it? And is that really, this is a real bit of a twister, but is the whole fake news story a fake news story itself? You know, I mean, it's gotten so bad in terms of getting information off the internet and the reliable sources that we had for so many years where we can get somewhat of, I would say, not honest, but, you know, information. It's become so cluttered. And the information, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter or on websites or wherever it may be, has gotten so polluted. And it's gotten so thick with the need to have advertisements and provide information. Now, one of the things that I've always wondered is, why is there no regulation on those signs that you go down the street and says, you know, the best burger in the world? Is that really the little shop on the corner, the best burger in the world? And why is nobody ever regulating any of this? Or you see that you have claims of an investment somebody says is going to do this and they know this because of this. And we believe them because we see the research, et cetera. But is it maybe because they are looking to push the investment they have themselves and provide, a methodology of helping them along? And then today in a local newspaper, I was reading this article about Kellogg's, a cereal firm, you know. They have something called the Breakfast Council. The Breakfast Council sounds pretty interesting. It's like kind of like a board of directors of, you know, involved in breakfast or something. And this Breakfast Council, which was quote unquote independent experts that helped guide the company's nutritional efforts. So they would put out all these various things about, the Breakfast Council that we have is suggesting that, eating a bowl of, Special K will help you through the day and provide the nutritional qualifications you need, blah, 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 blah. All these different things that we're talking about. And once again, now we're finding out that the company paid these experts $13,000 per year. They also prohibited them from offering media services for products that were competitive or negative to cereal. Competitive or negative to cereal. So I guess that would that be yogurt? I suppose eggs? Is that negative? Is that your competitor? You can't, you couldn't provide any kind of services if you're on this panel, not to mention they gave you $13,000 per year to do this. In addition to that, they were required to engage in nutrition influencer outreach on social media or with colleagues. And what we're finding out is some of the things that they said and the claims they made and the information they provided on social media, on blogs, on whether it was advertising, a lot of that was provided by Kellogg's themselves. So you saw something like somebody saying, I'm still feeling great from my bowl of cereal and milk this morning. Mini wheats are my fave. A dietitian said on the council posted during a Twitter chat with Kellogg. Now, another council member and dietitian chimed in to say they were also their favorites, too. And they even had a photo of the cereal there. So it's been around since 2011. And the problem is that there was this blurring of the lines between information about the true nutritional value and marketing, sales, and promotion. Now, the reason I bring this up is not necessarily to bust on Kellogg, which I think they deserve at this point if this is what they're doing, but this is going on all over the place. This is not just Kellogg. And it's happening on Twitter and social media. Why? Because we're all connected with it. And it's so easy for these companies to create these, we'll call them fake, or at least not necessarily true to what they say they are, in an effort to promote, and there's no oversight. The reason I bring this up is it's similar to what we see every single day in the area of stocks, in the markets, promotions, and people, you know, saying that this stock is going to be the play to have, and that stock's going to be the play, and don't invest in this, and gold's going to drop, gold's going to go up, whatever it is that, you know, we're going to say is going to happen here. And there's no checks and balances. There's nobody watching over. Regulators don't do a damn thing, whether it comes to Kellogg or it comes to stocks, unless it is egregious. Unless it's something that is so absolutely bent and it is so manipulative that it gets in their crosshairs somehow. But generally speaking, it doesn't ever get there. So we are sitting here as sheep. We're sitting here just listening over and over to the crap that's being put out by these companies. And the reason that they can do this and why they're successful at doing this is very simple. We've been trained. We've been trained to believe that the internet and the information that's provided, this is truth. This is fact. This is researched. This is something that we should follow. It's on Facebook, for God's sakes. And well, if it's on Facebook, and well, of course, there's got to be somebody overseeing what they say. But you know what? It's just like that hamburger sign. The best in the world. No one is actually going to fight it because the other companies are putting up their own sign somewhere else saying that they're the best hamburgers in the universe, in the galaxy. And therefore, what happens is that we are now sitting here in a time that we have to be skeptical of everything that's written, because we don't know the slant. Back when, years ago, maybe it was a little bit more, maybe it was more finely tuned. Maybe it was a little bit more nuanced. But we didn't have a station that you'd say, well, if I want to go to the conservative, I'm going to go right to Fox. And if I'm going to go to the more liberal and the left, I'm going to go to MSNBC. It wasn't exactly like that. The news was the news. Somehow along the way, commentators became all impressed with themselves. They became all engulfed in the fact that they can get a stage and a platform, and the TV stations and the radio stations allow them to do so. And this is one of the things, by the way, on this particular show, we tried to stay neutral and provide information, because what you find out there is there's so much crap that's going on that it's confusing, and so much bad information for investors. Forget about all the other things about hamburgers and cereal. Investors are getting really bad information. And it's a shame, because you're being taken advantage of. In the end, who wins? It's not us. It's not you and me. It's them. And we're starting to hear all sorts of stories about now that, well, indexing is the only way to go, or the active managers. Oh, well, finally, active management is starting to pay off again. And we go through these gyrations and these various cycles over time. This is something you need to really be aware of when you're reading information, reading news, you're in a chat room, you're following a particular a blog, let's say, that specializes in a certain area. You're following a particular person on Twitter, and you're wondering, well, what's their stake in this? Because there's nowhere that's really requiring anybody to disclose what their particular stake is in anything. Well, they say they do in that, you know, they say this. But how many times have you gone on Twitter and said, well, I want to let you know that we're effectively net short hard the market right now. And then a day later, you're like, well, yeah, we're long. Well, wait, when did you go long? You were just short. So they seem to play the game of moving the needle whenever they want to make it look like they're doing well. And that's just terrible. And one of the reasons we do this podcast is so you can learn a little bit and do it yourself to a degree. Of course, not everything can you do yourself. You don't have access to the much of the data that's required for, unless you're a professional investor. But at least, listen, get yourself to the point that you acknowledge that the information that's being put out there could have a very significant bias in favor of one side or the other, not just because of the belief of what they say, but because it could benefit the party that is promoting it. And that's exactly what's happening with Kellogg. And I got to tell you, I am sure this is happening in a lot of other places. The fake news stories that you're seeing every day come out recently that is being promoted for either political benefit or a benefit of the bottom line is something that has been growing rapidly over the last, let's call it 5 years. Really, probably longer than that. But over the last 5 years, with the fact that the dependence, and the use of social media as a focus of where we get our information from, and therefore the scrambling of the core news sources that used to be the place that you would get your information from, have become so terrified of losing your eyeballs or losing your viewership that they are now caving into all this. Be warned that when you hear a stock tip, ask the question, where is it coming from? Why is it there? If it's not somebody that you know and follow and can understand what they're saying, why they're saying it, don't just act on it. Do your own research. But understand that at the end of the day, there is this gigantic bias that is going on right now in the media, in social media, and on the web that you have to be aware of. It's disgusting. It's just terrible. And unfortunately, we've all been trained over the years that this is an acceptable place to find information. And you know what? We can get it for free. I don't like the free information that I get out there. Well, these days it's not free anyway. These days you have to sit through a video or two or some kind of advertisement pop-up before you even get that. And I understand that. The companies want to make sure that they're being paid. But this whole advertising model, all it does is promote warped headlines to grab your attention. And then therefore, it also doesn't really promote the idea of writing a good story that has good information, because they want to make sure they are as exciting as possible to keep you captivated with what they're saying. That's just not a good recipe for investing. So bring that all back, the whole fake news thing, the best hamburgers, the cereal BS that's going on here with Kellogg, and bring it all back into the world of investing, and consider that you need to always have that one eye open of, okay, well, why are they saying this? What's their benefit? Because otherwise you're going to be just chopped around like crazy, and it's just not worthwhile. Now, one of the things that we've been hearing lately is this whole idea that, well, active investing is dead. And just as a backdrop of what is active investing, what is passive investing? So in the early days, it was very difficult for individuals to get access to things like buying the Dow Jones Industrial Average, buying a particular sector of the S&P 500, buying a, let's call it a country stock exchange, whether it's, for example, you want to invest in Brazil. For a long time, it was very difficult. The only ways you could really do that was get some exposure through mutual funds, and it wasn't. It was the end of day trading. You couldn't buy it intraday. If you wanted to hold it for a short period of time, you really couldn't through mutual funds. The only way to really get the best stocks from an area, let's say, was through active management. You go to a mutual fund that didn't index, and there was, again, in the early days, there wasn't a lot of these. But you go to a mutual fund, and you say, well, I want to buy the Latin America fund. And you would rely on a manager to go after the best stocks. Let's say if it's an equity portfolio in Latin America, the best stocks in the countries within Latin America that meet the criteria of whatever particular growth model or value model they have. Then we start to see a lot of indexing going on. You know, companies like Vanguard, Fidelity, it was indexing. So people would say, you know what, I don't really want to get involved in having somebody pick a stock here and there. We don't really know what the particular manager is, you know, if he's going to do well or not, or maybe have a couple of good years and maybe a couple of bad years. I'd rather just buy the index. So that started happening. And then ETFs cropped up. And over time, what happened was there was various companies that were really promoting what was called passive investing. So active investing is where you find individual stocks or countries or areas, and you're actively finding the ones that you believe are the right places to play as a manager. Passive investing is, you know what, the hell with that. Let's just buy an index. We'll buy the Staples Index. We'll buy the S&P 500. We'll buy the Latin America benchmark. We'll look at benchmarking and we'll just simply create a fund or an ETF that matches that. And we don't have to bother with all the other problems that are associated with active management, because over time, the idea is that the S&P 500 is the benchmark. So why not just be the benchmark anyway? Companies like Dimensional Funds and Vanguard really promoting these over the years. And then again, the ETFs came into play. And now, because ETFs are so easy to invest in and so cost effective, many people are saying, well, we'll just do that. Throw my money in the SPY or the IWM or the DIA and just be done with it and just let it just, you know, be there over time. And that's great when markets are moving directionally, slowly upwards over time. Now, consider the fact that as this all is going on, we've seen a decreasing interest rate environment and a move from the lows back in 2008, 2009 that has been pretty dramatic. And therefore, it is training people to say, you know what, we can be buy and hold again. Because, of course, back in 2007, 2008 or so, everybody's like, buy and hold is hell. It's done. It's closed. Never again. Never, never again. And all of a sudden, as time goes on, as the Fed is very accommodative, as we see that investments are moving along very nicely, companies are doing all sorts of things to engineer their finances, and earnings are coming out better than expected, and bond issuance is high, and interest rates are low, and leverage is cheap, liquidity is high. Well, we're back to, well, buy and hold again. And passive management, the act of buying ETFs and things of that nature, it's become very, very popular. As a matter of fact, and again, let me just state one point. This is all cyclical. You'll see what I mean in a few years. It's all cyclical. It's going to be, the cycles don't die. They elongate, they change. The amplitude from the high to the low of the cycle will change. It will kind of, you know, morph over time, but they do cycle. Jack Bogle, you know, the founder of Vanguard, he recently said, "What's clear is that we're in the middle of a revolution caused by indexing. It's reshaping Wall Street. It's reshaping the mutual fund industry. And it's doing something very simple. It's shifting the allocation of stock market returns away from Wall Street and toward Main Street. We're beyond the beginning, but nowhere near the end." Now, however brilliant this man is, which he is, no, just not taking anything away from him, the fact is that simply piling money into a broad index is necessarily the best interest of everybody. It's not exactly what markets have been built on, and leads to sloppy business practices by companies. You know, they're not watching their bottom lines as much, or really don't care so much, because they know they're going to get, their stock's going to be, if they're in the S&P 500 or in a particular index, going to be swept up with the index. Because what's happening is we have people that are saying, well, I'm just going to take my weekly or monthly or annual investment and just pop it into this index. And when things go down, well, it's a good time to rebalance. And we see these very simplistic robo-investing type of strategies to simply rotating back and forth. When something gets too high, they sell it. When it gets too low, they buy it. In theory, when you have a market that generally is moving up over time, and again, we have that. One of the reasons is low interest rates. We'll see what happens with the fiscal policy of Trump, et cetera, in the future. But right now, we've been in a very low interest rate environment with a lot of liquidity that keeps on getting poured on the markets continually. That's fine. But when things change, when now we're seeing that interest rates are rising and possibly companies will not be able to refinance and issue debt at the low cost that they have been doing for some time, and therefore that would lead to less buybacks, which we are seeing. We saw the reports over the last few weeks that have shown that the last several quarters, lower buybacks are going on. This is where all of a sudden things start changing. And the more important issue here is that it's good to, there are some places that I agree that passive investing is a very smart play. In our global allocations, for example, in our new to be released soon Investology offering, which is going to be really cool. We're working on it. There's a lot of back end work on this, but we're working on this. You know, ETFs, passive investing is good for certain sectors. You want to invest in the S&P 500. You want to invest in small caps domestically. That's great. But you know, when you want to go into emerging market bonds, you want to be into or any bonds for that matter, or you want to be in, let's say, certain REITs, real estate investment trusts, or maybe even commodities. I don't want to be in a passive investment in that. I want boots on the ground for those managers that are looking outside the U.S. for areas to invest so that I don't get caught up in some really weird geopolitical issues and not have currency hedges on right. So there's definitely a way to invest passively and actively. And this is where all these robo-advisors really fall short. Because they really just, you know, the things that they say, well, we have low fees and low cost on our ETFs. Well, that's great. That's just terrific. But if you have the wrong investments, I don't care how low your fees are, things aren't going to look so pretty in the portfolio over time. And even if you're doing that rebalancing where you're just chopping the highs and buying the lows, if you, in theory, the truth of the matter is that it doesn't matter if you had a 25 basis fee for a mutual or ETF or a 50 basis point fee, 0.5% in a mutual fund, if the mutual fund is going to provide that much more benefit on the upside or the downside. So I think that one of the big things that you have to look at here is the idea that you need to have a really good balance in this. And this whole idea, and this is what's so startling to me, is this whole idea that we're starting to see more and more discussion about, well, just, oh, come on now. Active investing is so out. So yesterday. And you only want to be passively invested. Does that really make any sense to you? I just don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. There are different ways to invest. And if in fact the markets are going to turn into just one gigantic passive investment, the markets will not stand for that for long. Because markets are, again, have been built on the idea that there are stocks that are better than others because of whether it's management, product, distribution, or 100 other things. And there's a lot of product companies that are not as good as others because of the same or different circumstances. Therefore, in certain circumstances, in certain sectors, in certain areas around the world, you want to be passive, and certain areas you want to be active. So this is why just a very quick commercial on Investology, why we are, you know, having this idea that, well, we'll have a balance in this. We'll have the best of all worlds. This is why we're calling it advisor-crafted portfolios with a technology enhancement versus a lot of these robo guys. Again, we're not really calling this a robo, but it's the closest thing we can come up with as an equivalent to look at and explain. A lot of these robos are just simply technology only, making it that they've outsmarted the markets by simply saying, well, we're just going to use all ETFs. That doesn't make any sense. Advisor crafted, technology enhanced. So we'll have more on that as we get closer. You can sign up for any of our, by the way, our mailing lists, where you can go over to the Disciplined Investor top right. There's a way to simply sign up for, regular updates, or in fact, if you sign up and want to download this next thing I'm going to talk about, make sure you get on the list to find out more about Investology. Let's talk about this. This is really kind of cool. Now, have you noticed over, last month, there has been some stocks that have been moving quite exceptionally. In particular, we've seen that these bulk shippers, a company called like Dry Ships, and a few others have been, I mean, dry ships went from $5, listen to this, $5 to $115 in about a week, week and a half. I don't know about you, but that's a pretty good move. And then I saw a few others doing the same kind of thing. Maybe not as exaggerated as that, but moving like crazy. I started thinking, well, maybe the shippers are getting a benefit from some of the new laws that could be enacted by the new president and Congress. And I started thinking, well, that doesn't make any sense because the shippers come, you know, have goods from other countries that are going to be brought in here maybe, or we have goods that are going to come from the U.S. to other countries. And if the dollar is really high and it costs more, well, that doesn't make sense. And if we're going to put on tariffs or we're going to try to do a more of a domestic-based product sourcing, well, that doesn't make sense either. So let's throw that out. Let's find out a little bit more about this. So I started looking into all of these stocks and I started to track all these stocks that were moving. And you know what I found? I found something in common with all of them. What I found was, first, stocks that recently had a reverse split. So when you have a stock that splits, right, we have, let's say, a stock like Apple. It was $700. They do it as an example. They do for a 7-for-1 split. And that means that they take, you know, shares out of the market to, or I should say, let's do it differently. Let me start again on this. When you have a split, a normal split, let's say 2-to-1 split, let's make it easy. So you have a stock that's trading at 100. Now it trades at 50, but you have double the shares. So you effectively have the same amount of money you own, but you have double the shares. So that's kind of cool. Okay. Now, a reverse split is exactly opposite. Let's say you have 100 shares and there's a 10-for-1 reverse split. Now you only have 10 shares, but the stock price goes up. But again, just simply multiplying the amount of shares you have times the stock price yields you the same amount of money you had before and after. Okay. So the move from $5 to $115 on dry ships, I was wondering, well, maybe there was some of these agencies that are not reporting it correctly because dry ships had a 15-to-1 reverse split on the 1st of November. So maybe they're not calculating the split value. Maybe they're not looking at the split value correctly in the pricing, and therefore that's really what happened. It went 15 times up the price, and that wasn't the case. So I went a little further. And I started to see that there was a pattern, that many of the stocks that were moving up seemed to have recent reverse splits. In addition to that, we saw that the shares outstanding, or the float, the amount of shares that are actually traded in the markets, not held in treasury shares by the company, but the actual shares that were held inside the hands of investors in the open market, they were pretty small. There was not a lot of float out there. And on top of that, the third thing that was really important was the percent of float that was held short was very high. So what I did was, you know, in The Disciplined Investor, the book that I wrote, Essential Strategies for Success, which is available on audiobook, by the way. You can go over to Amazon or Audible and you can get that in audiobook, download that. Just look up my name or The Disciplined Investor and you can download that book. I actually narrated that. You know what? We have something called quantitative investing. What is that? Well, it's the process of screening, finding various factors that we can screen on to maybe find stocks that meet certain criteria for investing. So we do that on a regular basis when we want to find maybe some value stocks or some growth stocks. And we look at all sorts of different fundamental and technical indicators to bring up a list of stocks. And then you narrow it down by looking at the fundamentals further and then looking at the technicals. Okay, fine. But let's just stick on the whole quantitative side. Let's look at the screening, the filterings process. So what I did was, I said, let's find stocks that have recently have in the last year, let's say a reverse split. Let's find those stocks that have, a shares outstanding or the float that's under, you know, 3 or 4 million. Let's see where they also have a 30-day average volume, which is low, and a percent of float that is held short that's very high. So what does that combine and tell us? There's not a lot of shares outstanding, number one. Number two, there was this reverse split. There's even more shares taken off the market. Then we also have high short float, high float a short interest that is on the float. Therefore, any kind of move on the stock will be exaggerated dramatically. And those that are caught short are going to get pummeled. Now, a quick note on the other side. Dry ships hit 115, is back to $5.50 again, $6. However, there's still the potential for those to be looking at possibly shorting it and those that are looking to make some money on it. But there's a lot of other names on this list too. Skyline Medical up 23%, by the way, on Friday. Oculus Innovative, Semis LED, Sky People Fruit Juice, Top Ships, BioStar Pharmaceuticals. These are just the ones that I've highlighted, by the way. And there's a bunch more. What I have is available to you a list of these that I screened. And I'm not saying these are all good investments. These are ones you want to put on your watch list for if they start to move, there can be a very significant pop on these. I even highlighted, you'll see a little purple highlight in the column that talks about the 30-day average and the against the daily volume. Now, what I wanted to look at there was, you don't want to, like, there's a stock called Professional Diversity. They had a split on 927 of 8-1. There's some shares outstanding, but they only trade 6,000 shares per day on average. That's not something you want to get too involved with immediately till that volume picks up because you get whipsawed all over the place. But I highlighted the ones that seem to be those that you can watch that had a reasonable amount, reasonable, quote unquote reasonable. Some of them are still low, but amount of volume that actually plays on a regular basis. And if you look at them and look at the percent of short interest on there, in particular, BioStar Pharmaceuticals, as I mentioned, dry ships over both over 30, Comma Matrix at 25, Ocean Power Tech at 23, Gravity at 29. Now you start putting together a picture for trading. This is, remember this trading, you start putting together a picture of stocks that when they hit and when they start to move, this is something that could be a very significant hit. These are not stocks to hold on for the rest of your life. These are not stocks. A lot of these are having all sorts of problems. In particular, the dry shipping companies are having a lot of problems with their debt issues and repayment of their debt, servicing of their debt. But these are really kind of interesting. I thought it was just a really cool, when I did all this, I thought it was, that I found the common thread in many of these, I thought was really interesting. So how do you work with these now? What do you do? Well, as a trader, what you want to do is you want to put these names with the symbols on a watch list. If you have a system that will provide you alerts, you set an alert. It could be a high volume move. It could be just through a particular resistance area. It could be something that when you see all of a sudden that the average volume is greater than the 30-day average volume. There's a lot of different ways to alert yourself to see how there is the opportunity that may present itself. Because what you want to see is a very outsized volume move. Once that volume starts ticking up and it's moving directionally, that's where you can get real, you know, hit a real payday. So just another avenue and another way to invest. So we talked about, you know, passive investing and active investing. That's kind of a little bit more relaxed, much more conservative. We talked about in the show also what not to look at, this fake news and the, you know, all these social media, Twitter promotions and testimonials and things of that nature. And now we're talking about some quantitative investing, some ways that you can actually make some money. So what to do's, what not to do's, kind of trying to blend it all in this show, bring us back to some of the basics here this episode so that we can look at opportunities, particularly that may present themselves. Now, this will not be the last of this. This particular high short interest and reverse split phenomena that was going on in the last couple of weeks, you know, it could peter out quickly and something else might come along. My thought process is here that you can, number one, you can download this. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, this show. There's a little form there that says download this. Just put your email and name in there so we can get you in there and provide you updates in the future. And we'll send that right to you. In email, download, click the download and we'll shoot you out an email with it. But the idea here is to get you thinking about some ways to invest, alternatives to invest, ways to benefit your portfolio over time. And it's not just one way. Yeah, you could be a commodity trader and just trade gold all the time and just trade oil all the time. That could be something that, you know, you do all the time. And that's what you, but you know what? A little diversification goes a long way. Matter of fact, it's extremely important to stay diversified in a portfolio and just make sure that you have various different ways, because not everything works all the time the way it's supposed to. A lot of outside influences that affect things. Anyway, keep that in mind. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. This show notes right on the front page, or click through to the show notes of this episode number 486 for the end of November 2016. And you'll be able to download this just to see kind of how these play. And I think it'll be interesting. And I love your comments back to me, by the way. You can send me a note on the site. Also, there's an Ask Andrew section. You can just click that and send me back some comments. I'd like to know your thoughts on this and how this works out for you. Because I think this is, again, just one way. But this is, just keep your mind thinking about, why is that happening? Where's the common elements? Because one of the things you probably do as a trader, if you are a trader, or if you even are investing every once in a while looking for opportunities, where do I find the name? Where do I find the idea? And if we already pretty much just threw out the whole idea of trying to find somebody's tip from Facebook, Twitter, or wherever else, or a blog, if the tips aren't working, or TV, radio, podcast, if we're just trying to throw out the ideas of, you know, just getting a random idea and just investing in it, here's a way that you can do it yourself. And there's plenty of ways that you can do this whole filtering. Plenty of sites out there that have this. So look up Stock Screener, or maybe if you have TradeStation, you could probably do some of this, or a Y-Charts, or if you have Bloomberg, or you have Thomson Reuters, or whatever you have, there are stock screeners that will enable you to try to put this together yourself. But again, you got to find the common thread. That's what we did here. All right, let's see. What else is on my list? What else is on the list? Got a long list. We talked about that. Dry ships. We talked about that. Okay. Oh, yeah. So we'll see what happens also with the OPEC meeting. Already Iran is backing out. Russia's saying, maybe not. Oil popped up very nicely. Clearly, the whole OPEC shenanigans are a great example of quote-unquote fake investment news. The idea to try to move markets along the way they want them to do by promoting some cock and bull story that they're going to cut production, which, who knows, maybe they will, maybe they won't. But they've been dragging this on for months already. Just another example how people are being suckered. And I don't want that to be you. I don't want that to be you or me, for that matter. So kind of let's get our antennas up. Coming into the end of the year, we have the opportunity to now, really put together some very good baseline processes, disciplines, the disciplined investor, hello. And I think that this will be very important for you to be successful moving forward, particularly because I think the environment for investing is changed. I'm not saying it's going to go down the markets. I'm not saying it's going up, but I think the environment, now that we have fiscal stimulus possibly on the horizon, is going to change. And you can't tell me that it's not going to change if all we had previously was monetary policy. And now all of a sudden, a lot of these countries around the world are seeing a lot of resistance to old policies and same old, same old. So with that in mind, we'll end it there. I know we have a couple of great guests coming up in the next few weeks. And I hope that you have a great rest of the holiday week, watching some football, eating some leftovers, probably a lot of leftovers. I had a great turducken, by the way. Awesome. Also spent some time with Adam Curry this week. He came into town. That was a lot of fun. So anyway, wishing you the best. Make sure to go over to disciplinedinvestor.com. Download my book from Audible. You can get a copy there. And make sure to listen to DH Unplugged this week. We're going to be announcing the next cup, or the DH Unplugged closest to the pin cup for the end of the year for those who are participating. And we'll have some great ideas and stories as well. I'm probably covering some more of this whole fake news thing. Not to mention, I got to get to the bottom of this whole mannequin challenge thing. Dvorak hopefully has some answers, because I'm bewildered what the point is. Unless it's just fun, I guess, and just let it go. But it seems to be, it's like the ice cube challenge. Ice bucket challenge. At least there was some money going to a charity for that one. So could somebody please pony up some money for some charities for this one? Be awesome. Anyway, thanks for joining me. And any information you need on any of our strategies, Horowitz is a company. You have the global allocation strategies, of course. You have the TDI managed growth strategy, Arrow, the algorithmic strategy. And coming up, something you're really just, you're going to want to see, this whole Investology offering. It's going to be really cool. Anyway, I'll see you next week. Thanks for joining me. Bye-bye.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.